Spotlight.
Good evening and welcome to Spotlight. My name is Rajesh Lake. As West Bengal heads into another crucial assembly election, the political temperature is rising and so are the questions around governance, voter sentiment and electoral integrity. From ground-level issues shaping voter choices to the Election Commission of India's preparedness in ensuring free and fair polling, this election is being closely watched across the country. To break it all down, we are joined by senior journalist Aditi Tandon. Aditi, a warm welcome to Akashvani.
Thank you, Rajesh.
Aditi, let me start with the mood on the ground. What are the dominant issues influencing voters in West Bengal this time?
The most dominant issue that the ruling Trinamool Congress is going to face will naturally be the issue of anti-incumbency, because Mamata Banerjee has had 15 straight years in power, and naturally she will have a challenge basically defending her regime. And on the side of the BJP, we see a very aggressive campaign being unleashed with Prime Minister Narendra Modi and Home Minister Amit Shah personally leading the charge against the Trinamool Congress and accusing the ruling dispensation in West Bengal of a range of issues, including alleged corruption, syndicate raj, the issue of women's safety in West Bengal, the issue of identity of Bengali people in West Bengal, and most of all, the issue of illegal immigration, which has been dominating the narrative all across the election cycle in West Bengal. I must add here that although these issues of anti-incumbency from the side of Trinamool Congress, which is going to contest for a record fourth term in West Bengal, remain dominant, of late we have seen that the matter of a special intensive revision of electoral rolls in West Bengal has become a major talking point for the voters of the state. There is an issue with respect to the revision of electoral rolls, and both sides are making their own pitch with respect to deletions, where the Trinamool Congress will naturally accuse the ruling party of the day at the center of trying to skew the electoral rolls in its favor. The Election Commission has repeatedly said that this is a constitutional exercise which is mandated by the constitution of the country to revisit the electoral rolls and ensure that only the genuine citizens of India get the right to vote and that all illegal immigrants are removed from the electoral rolls.
Okay.
So these are the large issues that are capturing the imagination of the people, with the latest addition, of course, Rajesh, being the issue of 33% women's reservation. We've just seen the special session of the parliament end. The bill was defeated and Prime Minister Modi addressed the nation yesterday, and obviously he launched a no-holds-barred attack on the opposition, including the Trinamool Congress, and blamed it for stalling a decades-old agenda.
You mentioned some of the dominant issues that are facing, or rather influencing, the voters. How significant are the local governance issues like unemployment, rural distress and infrastructure in shaping voter sentiment?
Rajesh, we have followed, and as journalists, I'm sure you have followed too, the pattern of election narratives in the country. And if you analyze the voter behavior, whereas local issues always are relevant, the issues that you mentioned, the issue of corruption, the issue of urban infrastructure, the issue of rural distress is relevant, unemployment is relevant to all election cycles. These are common uniform issues that bother the electorate everywhere. But what we have seen election through election, Rajesh, is that there's this one emotive issue or few emotive issues that actually turn the election. And every time that you look at the political parties, the challenge for the political party is to first identify with the sentiment of the electorate of the time, and then to mold that sentiment based on their own political agendas or narratives. So right now, whereas the issues of bread and butter that you just mentioned remain relevant to the people of West Bengal, and they must, other issues related to the identity of the people of Bengal, the issue of illegal immigration, issue of SIR, and the issue of uniform civil code, which the opposition BJP has made an election promise that if they get elected in West Bengal, they are going to bring the UCC within 6 months of coming to power. So you see, all these issues become important emotional issues. These are the X factors that will eventually drive the election in one way or the other. And there is always this fringe vote, which is thinking of which side to go. So that is the reason you see the last minute push being made by top leaders of both the camps of the ruling and the principal opposition camp, and obviously the Congress and the left, which have seen their electoral footprint shrink majorly in West Bengal as the BJP has gained over the years.
So you mentioned about the women reservation bill. How are women voters influencing henceforth or going forward the electoral discourse, especially with welfare schemes in focus?
You see, we have seen from the Election Commission data that has been analyzed and also published after a spate of recent state elections and earlier in the 2024 Lok Sabha elections, that the percentage of women voters is steadily rising. This has naturally become an issue of debate among political observers and experts, which are trying to analyze why the women of India are coming out in such large numbers and, you know, standing up to be counted. What has changed for them? So I think in that particular context, the word that you mentioned, that the issue of women being seen as beneficiaries of a large number of government schemes may have played that role in mobilizing women as a political constituency. The BJP has repeatedly said that it values the women vote and they also target the women in all their schemes. Prime Minister has given the slogan of women-led development. He even managed to put a resolution for adoption on this particular message, women-led development, in the G20 presidency of India during the summit that happened in Delhi. So Prime Minister has made it clear that women are one of the four pillars going forward that will make India a viksit country by 2047, the other three pillars being poor, youth and farmers. So you see, Prime Minister and the ruling BJP has clearly stated their intentions that women of the country matter not only as, you know, silent recipients of government benefits, but as equal partners in political leadership and decision making. When you heard top leaders of the BJP speak in the Lok Sabha, including Prime Minister and Home Minister Amit Shah, you saw them talk about giving women finally an equal place on the decision-making table. Now, that's the highest form of representation you can give to any women. You know, you can talk about schemes, you can talk about empowerment, but are you willing to give them the political chair right next to you in the highest legislative bodies of India, which are the Lok Sabha and the state legislative assemblies?
Okay.
So I think that's where the entire women reservation debate is currently framed around.
How do you view the special intensive revision SIR of the electoral rolls? About 91 lakh voters were removed from the rolls during the SIR, with 27.16 lakh found ineligible and 63 lakh deleted earlier, mostly from the Murshidabad, North 24, Parganas and Malda. How do you view it, Aditi?
See, this is a constitutional mandate of the Election Commission. There is no doubt about it. But largely, it is also, you know, important that the electorate for which you carry out the special intensive revision of voter rolls should trust the mechanism and the systems that have been used in order to achieve the constitutionally mandated outcomes of the special intensive revision of electoral rolls, which have to happen, which happen in every country. We are no exception. It's nobody's case that illegal immigrants should get the right to vote in the country. But what is the case really is whether the due process of law has been followed, whether all legal options available to the people whose names have been deleted have been accorded. For instance, we know that in the case of West Bengal, a large number of voters have been deleted. You yourself mentioned 91 lakh. And naturally, the matter has gone to the Supreme Court. And the latest direction of the Supreme Court basically has said that the Election Commission of India should issue a supplementary revised electoral rolls, basically to include, you know, the voters whose appeals against deletion of names have been allowed by the appellate tribunals before the specified cutout dates. Right now, what's happening in West Bengal is, whereas the process is going on, the appellate tribunals are not functional, which is the cause of major anxiety among a number of electors. And now, under the directions of the Supreme Court, the Election Commission is engaged in the task of removing that kind of trust deficit, because that does not help anybody. A constitutional exercise should be conducted following constitutional mechanisms and norms.
Aditi, the ECI has specifically focused on super sensitive polling stations and strict enforcement and seizure operations. But can central forces really neutralize the deeply entrenched local muscle power of political parties?
You have asked an extremely relevant question. I think that sits at the heart of the debate around free and fair elections in West Bengal. Unfortunately, West Bengal, you know, which was the symbol of cultural renaissance, political renaissance of the country at the time of the freedom movement, has come to be known as the political violence capital of the country. And every regime that has been in charge there, we remember the days of the left regime that Mamata Banerjee fought so valiantly against. In fact, what's ironical is that Mamata Banerjee's own regime should be accused of exactly what the left regime used to do and what she stood against all her life. Her entire politics was shaped by the resistance against the left parties, and that's the reason she left the Congress, because she thought that the Congress was not aggressive enough against the leftist regime of West Bengal, and she achieved her objectives. But as you said, what will ensure a free and fair election in West Bengal? The central agencies can only try. Election Commission of India is responsible for the free and fair election mandate under the constitution. So naturally, they have reviewed the situation on the ground and they came back and made a recommendation that central forces should be deployed for elections in West Bengal this time. And we know for a fact that around 2.4 lakh central armed forces personnel are currently already deployed in West Bengal in order to ensure that voters who want to vote are allowed to do that freely, that, you know, no harm comes to their body or person, because we have had reports, very unfortunate ones, and there are cases in the court where people have actually been killed for exercising their right to adult franchise. Now, that is beyond imagination, and that should be unacceptable in an inclusive and parliamentary democracy like India, because it's simply against all principles of constitutionalism.
Okay, the youth participation, let's talk about that. Are the first-time voters leaning towards any particular narrative or leadership style?
The analysis of 2019 and 2024 elections, which is well publicized and talked about, had shown that first-time voters had leaned towards the BJP, especially in the aftermath of the national response to the Pulwama terror attack. We all remember that that was a massive mandate that the government of the day had received in 2019. In 2024, the first-time voters did cast their votes on various issues, and there were differences state to state. But what I do believe, Rajesh, is that first-time voters do take into consideration atmosphere in the country, whether we are reform oriented, how much opportunity are the youth getting to realize their potential. Right now, I think we are going through a very bad patch because of the West Asia war. And if we look at our neighborhood, Rajesh, India, under the able guidance, I must say, of our finance minister, Nirmala Sitharaman, has largely been able to ward off the shocks that our neighbors are facing right now because of severe disruption of supply chains. We know that crude oil has been affected. We know LPG, LNG supplies have been affected. India imports 60% of its natural gas requirements. And just imagine what it must be taking the government to keep the economy together. We have not yet seen a price rise in petrol and diesel. Also, essential commodities, measures have been taken well in time to ensure that hoarding, black marketing of essential commodities is prevented. I think at this time, with the West Asia war looming and the impact of West Asia war inevitable, the youth of the country must be watching everything. I think these factors also do play a role.
The ECI reviewed webcasting arrangements, voter information slip distribution, and operational readiness of voter assistance booth as part of its preparedness review. Aren't these technology and transparency interventions actually making a perceptible difference in a state with such deep-rooted electoral malpractice?
I think, yes, they do help in a lot of ways. See, the first thing that they do is they give a sense of trust to the voter that there are systems in place. For instance, if I am a voter in a certain state and I am entering the polling booth and I see that, you know, there is a webcasting system in place, that it is not easy to basically capture the booth, that I am free to cast my vote, and there are mechanisms in place, visible mechanisms in place to protect my right to vote, to protect the secrecy of my vote. It gives me the confidence to exercise my adult franchise in a truly free and fair manner.
On that note, thank you very much for those valuable insights, and thank you for being with Akashvani.
Thank you.
Listeners, you can also listen to this program on our mobile app, News on AIR, and our YouTube channel, News on AIR Official.
Spotlight.